I am Bill Courtwright with Living Right with Bill Courtwright, and this is the Stress Mastery Podcast, where we take you from the science to the spirituality of stress mastery.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Stress Mastery Podcast. I am your host, Bill Courtwright. This week, our topic is adversity. In today's Meeting of the Minds, we have a special guest. His name is Jeff Spinks, and Jeff will be joining me to talk about adversity and addiction. Jeff is currently finishing his Bachelor of Science degree in Child and Family Studies, and he's in the process of developing an addiction coaching process. This is to help addicts actually in recovery to develop other areas in their life to create a more balanced state of well-being. Welcome to the show, Jeff. It's great to have you.
Hey, Bill. Good to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you, and we'll get into it a little bit because you helped me a lot with a former client of mine the other day. And I thought, well, I got to bring you onto the podcast to talk about this. So before we get started, you wanted to dedicate this podcast to a friend. Go right ahead and do that, please.
Yeah, I'm honored to be here today. And I'd like to dedicate this podcast to a friend of mine, Jake, who passed away recently, had struggled with his active addiction returning into his life. And just like to dedicate that to Jake. He was a good guy, and I miss him.
He was very young.
Yeah, he was only 31 years old.
And that's why this is what drives you to do your work and what you're building. Because if we look at adversity, right, we're talking about that this week, Jeff. Adversity is actually a state, which means you're in this. It's an energy of, you know, continued difficulty and misfortune. And that's what drives people to try to escape. Adversity is so uncomfortable, people want to escape. And that's what drives addiction. So, Jeff, you, and we know each other very well, you fell into addiction at a pretty young age. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was in my teenage years. I'd started having some difficulties probably around the end of elementary school, about the fifth grade. And alcohol was the first substance to enter the picture. And then marijuana entered the picture. And I didn't think it was that abnormal. A lot of my friends, you know, were experimenting with the same thing in their teenage years. But it immediately seemed to take on a deeper meaning to me than it did with a lot of my friends. So I think my alcohol and drug problems entered into my life at a young age. Back in, I was born in 1970. So, you know, it was in the 80s.
Okay. That was a heavy drug time too in the 80s, if I remember right. So when we talked, Jeff, you said you had fallen into this. You tried to get out, or did you feel trapped in it? When did it become where you felt like, well, this is different for me than my friends? Like, my friends can go and drink and they're okay, but I can't. When did you realize that?
Well, I experienced consequences from the beginning, really. And things would happen, but the addiction definitely, like is said in the rooms of the 12-step programs, it had me in the grips pretty young. And I knew that it was causing problems, but it was something that I desired, something that seemed to just fit good and was a life that I kind of idolized and admired. I mean, the people that I looked up to, you know, they were doing drugs, they were partying, and that's the life that I wanted to live.
And so when that life became to be too much, which it did, you entered NA, which is Narcotics Anonymous, which is one of the 12-step programs. What drove you into that program? What was it that drove you in to that particular program? What took you there?
Well, I was actually forced into recovery through a adolescent drug treatment center. I was about 17 years old, and my older brother and my dad took me on a shopping trip down to Atlanta, Georgia from Greenville, South Carolina. And I We pulled up at I think it used to be an A&P grocery store in Marietta, Georgia. And so I was in that program, you know, forced into that program at 17 years old. And so that was really my introduction to recovery. So, and in order to progress through the 5-phase program, it was called Straight Atlanta. And you had to kind of get down with the way they wanted you to do things. It was a lot of positive peer pressure from the people that were there before you. And it was a tough program, but it was something that happened in the 80s, where if your kid was causing you a lot of problems and drugs and alcohol were leading them down a wrong path, then a long-term drug treatment center was what was recommended, I believe.
And now you use, now, because you still always go to meetings and things like that. You don't take your sobriety for granted. You know what I mean? You really work the program and help others work the program. And did you find that for you, the 12 steps work, but it doesn't work for everybody, correct?
Yeah. The 12 steps have helped me out a lot. Actually, the program is what has helped me out the most. Okay. Working the 12 steps has been difficult for me. I'd say I'm not that abnormal in recovery. When we get to the fourth step, it seems like the steps become kind of, oh, I've got to climb this mountain, man. And, you know, I hate this step. And, you know, so it's common that the fourth step begins the process of, you know, darn it, I got to work these darn steps. So, but what I enjoy about the 12-step program is the fellowship part of it. Kind of similar to like the old Cheers TV show. You know, you go to a place where everybody knows your name.
That's really cool. Yeah. So it brings you in. So you have a community to help you, you know? Yes. And so when I had a client and I was talking, again, a former client, and you were helping me with, and this former client had fallen into some active addiction, and you explained to me, I go, what do I do with him? And you go, after I shared his situation, you said, well, there's three things you need to do, Bill. You need one, help him get stability, because he was all over the place. Two, he needs to find an interest. And three, he needs to start a practice. And so can we talk about those a little bit? Like first starting with stability, when you're talking about somebody who's kind of we're going to talk about two things here today. We're going to talk people that are kind of an active addiction and then people that are in recovery, what they need to work on. But what would you say, when you say stability, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, stability, I guess it would kind of be like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, a person needs food, water, shelter. And let's get those three things taken care of. Make sure, hey, do you have a comfortable place to lay your head? You got some food, you got some shelter. You know, let's make sure you have that. And in recovery, a lot of times people have lost that. That they've driven away, family, friends don't want them around. And so the struggle just to find the stability of a place to stay, a little bit of money, and just an opportunity, a chance to try to put my life back together.
Wow, that's brilliant, Jeff. That is just brilliant, because you're absolutely right. That if those needs aren't met, how are you going to absolutely, you know, stay away from drugs, alcohol, whatever your addiction is, right? So stability. And the second thing you told me was he has to find an interest, find some type of interest. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, that has, that's kind of a deeper challenge. And one of the things that has really helped me working with you is realizing my aim, my purpose. And you've helped me to understand that a lot of times people get stuck. And a lot of my work with you has been about first recognizing my ego. That was a big realization. And then the identity crisis, which the school program has really helped me with the child and family studies, realizing that my addiction entered when I was in my adolescent years, and that a lot of people that struggle with the identity crisis set themselves up for a long hardship in life because they don't actually make it through that identity crisis.
And that, we talk about that a lot in Stress Mastery, because your identity builds your reality, right? So you can't, they're interchangeable. You can't separate them. So if you have a crisis of identity, you're going to have a crisis of reality. You can't separate them. So in finding an interest, do you recommend that they start, that's where you're recommending they start personal development and working on themselves and reading and expanding themselves, correct?
Yeah, and I think the book that you recommended that meant a lot to me was The Surrender Experiment with yes. Michael Singer. You know, he just seemed like kind of an old hippie guy that maybe didn't get caught by the drug,
right.
the drug game. And that I really, you know, finding idols, you know, a lot of times when I was younger, I idolized Michael Jordan. I idolized, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sean Penn, sure. You know, rock and roll guys. And, you know, so finding when you get older, the idol thing, I guess, doesn't quite mean as much, but it's almost like getting lost.
Like maybe finding a role model, like somebody to help you kind of because you talked about identity crisis, which is so important. You have to reset your identity, but if you don't have a model, well, how do you reset, right? Is that what you mean? I don't want to put words in your mouth, Jeff, but is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, might be getting lost a little bit here with the idol thing, because, you know, I'm 51 years old, so the idol thing doesn't mean a lot to me today. But when I was younger, the people that I admired, looked up to, wanted to be like, it meant a lot more then. And so I guess I'm kind of wrestling with that identity crisis that occurred. And it's not something that just you just get out of. It's like not like snapping your finger and saying, right. Oh, I didn't know who I was, but now I know who I am.
Yeah, that's exact. And that's the process you're going through right now, too. But it's also the process that you help others, because I know how many people you help. You help people all the time. And so so stability, which is amazing. I don't think people even think about that. And then finding an interest is really, you got to start to move out of the old identity, so you get out of crisis. And then three is you got to start a practice, whether it's the 12 steps or whether it's something, right? You told me, because I told you this guy doesn't want to do the 12 steps. You said, what is he like? I go, well, he's kind of spiritual. And you said, I think you told me yoga. Send him to yoga. He has to start something. When you say start a practice, what does that mean?
Yeah. So the practice for me is, you know, I attend Narcotics Anonymous meetings. I used to do Alcoholics Anonymous more, but I've drifted towards NA. I kind of like motorcycles, tattoos, a little younger crowd, but, I have to become, you know, okay with like, going, you know, first of all, I have to almost make myself do it for a while. It's kind of right. like doing the Green Focus Power Hour.
Right.
At first, yes. I didn't want to do it. I was like, you know, I don't have time to wake up an hour early and then go through all this. And I had to make myself do it. And sometimes today, I still have to make myself do it. But with the meetings, it's more of something that I want to do, because kind of like going to the bar, I fit in. I've gone there enough to realize that, I'm going to get something out of it, or I'm going to be able to meet somebody that's having a tough time and maybe be able to help them out. So
I think that's so important. I'm getting a lot of sense of community when you have issues, like if you're an active addict, right? That sense of community is so important. You're not alone. if you think you got to do it on your own, you're not doing it on your own, you know? So I'm getting that sense from you. And so when we talk about addiction recovery and you're developing these programs right now, it's to help those in recovery with the five life categories, right? So now you're in recovery, yet the five life categories of career, finance, health, relationship, and personal and spiritual development can sometimes be thrown off and still they don't have that well-being. So Jeff, in your experience, what are the challenges that many face while actually in recovery? What do you see with the people that are in recovery?
Well, you know, it's suggested in the first 90 days to make 90 meetings in 90 days. So that would be the practice that you mentioned. Find something, whether it be the gym, whether it be the church environment, something that you can go to consistently and make that a practice. So for me, it has been the NA meetings, and I still do that today. It's not like I decide that's my aim or purpose. That's my practice. That's what I do. So very I guess good. You would say, as far as my identity goes, yes, I am a person that attends NA meetings on a regular basis. I'm sorry, I got a little lost.
Well, we're talking about like the challenges, right? So they're in recovery. Let's say they're going to meetings and everything else. And you and I have talked about this. They still have challenges in their life that they don't address. There's really no personal development for those that are in recovery. We're talking about in recovery now. They're in, right? And so they're doing the practices and they're doing everything else. What is the life category that you see where a lot of people in recovery have problems? Is it in their careers and finance? Is it in health? Is it in relationship? You know, what is still giving them a lot of adversity?
I actually saw a woman last night after a meeting, and we discussed one of the toughest subjects in recovery is relationships and money.
Okay.
And so I would say that it would be finance and relationships.
So we talk about staying in recovery, right? And an adversity is the state of when we're in conflict. And so those things, like if they're not addressed in, right? It's all about, if you're going to your practice, it's so you don't use your drug or your drink or whatever your addiction is, right? But what about those other categories? That's where a lot of ongoing suffering happens in addiction, in recovery. Would you agree with me on that?
I would. I think that a lot of times in recovery, we can get stuck, and that recovery, the 12-step program would say, oh, you need to work the steps harder. You need to go to more meetings. You need to talk to your sponsor more. You need to go do some service work at a local, you know, rehab, things like that. And yeah, those are action steps that can be taken. But I think it is easy to get off the Jones, to have to drink or drug, and then not be lost. Be like, well, I know this 12-step it seems to work good for a lot of people. They become sponsors and help others, and this is great, but I'm stuck.
Yes.
I can't figure out how to get out of this.
And that's where it gets dangerous. And then we're talking about, when we talk about addiction, right? We always think drug and alcohol, but you're expanding it because there's gambling addictions, especially now. Gambling is a big thing because you can gamble online, especially in sports now, anywhere, right? There's sex addictions, there's internet addictions, shopping addiction, video game addictions, plastic surgery addiction. There's even binge eating disorders, food addiction, and risky behavior addiction. And what happens in addiction is you just don't have control. You don't have control, but these addictions start to affect all aspects of your life. And there are six types of adversity I know that you're working with, these hardships or difficulties. There's physical adversity. Well, if you have unexpected physical event, this could drive you back into your addiction. mental adversity, mental illness. It's something that we address very well on these shows because it's serious. It's real. And many people hide from that. Emotional adversity. They're stuck in something that went wrong. And you're right, Jeff, it's usually relationship. It might be money issues, but it's usually relationship, money issues. Social adversity. This was triggered during the pandemic. I would say that the state of society from the pandemic lockdown moved into fear, that mid red zone energy and that social adversity. There's spiritual adversity when people lose their faith. And like you said, there's financial adversity. So when people are in these adversities, Jeff, and they're doing their practices, but they're like on the edge. What do you tell somebody when they feel hopeless or lost in their adversity? How do you keep them from falling back into their addiction? And there's, like we said, there's a lot of addictions we're going to address in the future, but let's just stay with drugs and alcohol because that you're very familiar with. How do you help somebody who's maybe caught, maybe listening right now, and they're one of these adversities and they're like on edge? I'm going to drink or I'm going to go get drugs. What do you do?
Well, that's a tough question. And that's kind of why I dedicated this to Jake today, was because, you know, I talked to him a couple of weeks ago and I felt bad when I learned that, you know, he didn't make it. And you think about the deadly nature of the disease of drug addiction right now, that this younger generation, I mean, they're dropping like flies. And if you have a problem with opiates, heroin, pills, I mean, it wasn't like when I was a kid to where, you know, you wrecked cars and you got yourself in a lot of legal trouble. I mean, it's a different ball game, but it's almost like you feel like more of a desire to like stay like connected to folks because you know how it's gotten more deadly. So I think having someone in your life that you know you can always turn to, which for me has been my sponsor. I have some family members that I know I can turn to. With the family thing seems to come a little bit more judgment, but with a sponsor, it's like, it's almost like they love you no matter what. No matter what happens, you have to have that connection that you're not going to be judged if you, you know, tell them what's really going on. So having that connection, and when a person relapses, they lose that connection.
And that's a big thing. Yeah.
The community.
So I've heard, yeah, community connection. I've heard you. And so let's talk just a little bit about what you're developing in the personal development area, right? It's like, so when you have an addiction, you have an addiction. It's something that if you don't stay focused and manage it, it will take over your life and it will destroy you, right? It doesn't matter what the addiction is. It will destroy you, correct?
Correct.
So personal development is really moving that identity into a new identity. You're developing your identity, right? So one of the things that we have talked about is, you know, developing these practices, developing ways to keep yourself in expansion and growing. And a lot of times people get so stressed out, they just feel like they can't do it. Like you said, with the Green Focus Power Hour, they're so stressed out that they can't do it. Do you think that's where a coach helps? Because, you know, this is where a sponsor, a coach, and family, like you said, the hardest thing with family is sometimes they don't understand it, where a sponsor understands it because they've been through it. Usually a good coach, like you, when you start coaching people, when you finish all your stuff, you understand why. You have experience, right? You've been through this. Do you think that if leaning on family is not a good idea, or do you think it's okay when you're caught like that? What are your thoughts on that? Because I'm just thinking about your friend. I'm sorry. I'm kind of going off a little bit here. Your friend was 31 years old. What could have been done differently to help him? What could have been something he was developing in his life where he doesn't lose hope? Because to commit, you know, to fall down that rabbit hole, you got to be in hopelessness. You got to be in that low red zone energy. What could be done? What can somebody do? How do they deal so they don't end up there? Because I just don't know. That's why I'm asking you, Jeff.
I can see where a coach, you wouldn't have that connection in recovery where if you had relapsed, you didn't want to call your sponsor, but you might want to call your coach because, you know, there's a brotherhood in recovery. And when you go back out, you kind of leave that brotherhood, that sisterhood. And I think with a coach, I mean, it's not about, it would not be about that. You would have kind of a, almost like a safety net with a coach.
Yes, that's interesting. Cause do you feel like when people fall off, right? When they fall back into active addiction, do they feel ashamed? And they don't want to reach out to their sponsor because they feel like they let their sponsor down. Is that what happens sometimes?
Sure. I've experienced relapse, had 7 years in recovery, and I had a near-death experience at work and had to take a narcotic pain medication. And I went back to the doctor to get some more pain pills. And he said, Jeff, you've told me you've had a problem with drugs and alcohol. You better be careful with these pain pills. He said, even normal people get addicted to these pain pills. And that stuck in my head. I'd be like, normal people, they get addicted too? Yes. Like, that's weird. That's not what the 12-step program, they've taught me I'm different. I'm not like normal people. Normal people, the drugs and the alcohol don't seem to take on the same meaning it has to me in my life. And so I started thinking, well, these pain pills don't mean much to me, but I sure would like a bag of weed and some Budweiser right now.
And that's what kind of drove you that way? It drove you to want to go back on the other drugs?
In recovery, they call that you had a reservation, Jeff. And I was flirting around with the pain pills. You know, it's so easy when, you know, you need them and you're taking them for as they're prescribed and everything. It was just a weird concept to think about that normal people get addicted to.
And that changed your life because we talked about all those addictions. It's not what we think. It's like when you don't have control over your phone or the internet, that's an addiction, people. You can't live your life. So yeah, we don't have enough time to get, but that was a big thing that happened to you. That's a physical adversity, what happened to you, because you really did have a near-death experience and that threw you off everything, right? And then you had to get yourself back on. And so I understand completely what you're saying on there. So one of the things before we close out here, I want to talk about, so we talked about your three pillars of stability, interest, and practice. Those are musts for people, right? You use a lot, and you make me laugh out loud with some of what you call the old timers advice. What if you live by the old timers advice, and part of what you're working on is to bring the old timers advice to the new kids in the block, right? Yeah. So tell me a little bit about some of these old timers.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, Red Fox and all those guys.
Boy, we're got a young audience.
Yeah, some of these old timers, they're characters, you know, they got a lot of heart and soul and like genuineness. And so I really admire a lot of the old timers, and they've given me some really great advice. You know, being that I've struggled with this since 17, I'm 51. I've met a lot of the old timers in my area, and I could only imagine the old timers in different areas. But some of them have told me things like, I bring up something and they'll say, Jeff, that's like Ray Charles trying to help Stevie Wonder cross I-85.
That's really where you learn. That's a good role model, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they put you in your place, don't they? They don't pull any punches. And sometimes that's one of the things that I think is a challenge with the millennial crowd. And that is, I think a lot of people are afraid of upsetting them. And sometimes you just can't pull punches. You got to be tough on them as they're going through stuff, because that'll save their life. You know, that might have saved your friend's life, right? So, well, Jeff, this has been fantastic. And we have been talking to Jeff Spinks. Jeff, you've been incredible. We're definitely going to keep track as you start to develop things and have you back on the show, because you're going to be working with me a lot with different addiction and that. And if anybody wants to get a hold of Jeff, you could just contact us at info@livingrightwithbillcoatright.com, and I will put you in touch with him directly. I know you're working hard on finishing up everything that you're creating, but I wanted to thank you so much. And I hope that this show does dedicate a little bit to your friend. Anything you want to say before we close?
Well, I'd like to thank my older brother for bringing you into my life. I think your entry into my life is kind of like when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. It's interesting how, you know, God works and, you know, the spiritual realm. And I'm real grateful for you, man.
Well, thank you, because I'm grateful for you, too. You helped me a lot. You really did. And especially with this gentleman, you helped me a lot. You know, so I'll never forget, stability is one of the most important things, because it's the last thing I would think about. I didn't even think about that. And it was exactly what he needed. That's it for today's show. Our mission here is to create a shift in the planet. You can join us on this mission by simply like, share, subscribe. Those links are right below the show. As always, until next time, stay inspired.